You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Can you write it? I do.
Just like that, little girl told me down by the cold creek. It don't matter if your poles are dusty. Beer in the tackle box out on the flat rock. Big Mac hook with only the right look. Pour in the sunshine, ripples in the sweet tide. Papa's going out of sight. Even if it tastes all night. Ooh, I'm gonna catch me a winner. Cause I kinda like a bit. And I don't mind.
Welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I am in the studio this morning with my co-host, Captain Greg Stamper of Snook Stamp Charters. Good morning, Captain.
Good morning, Captain Debbie. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're still waiting for Rick's review of the Wagyu bacon bagel sandwich, aren't we?
Which one did you get?
Thumbs up?
I haven't done the Wagyu yet. I did the other one, which was just like... It's smoked coulette? Is that how it's pronounced?
Coulette. Yes.
Coulette.
Yes, yes.
With roasted onions and jack.
Oh, he even printed off on the menu for you.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
I make sure he knows what he's eating.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
Yeah, but so I'm not done yet, though. So
all right.
I'll
get the review.
I'm going in.
Okay.
Yeah, the first one was off the chart.
We will await your review. Okay, we are going to head over to line one because we've got Dave Westra with Lear's Economy Tackle standing by. Hey, Dave, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. And I agree with everything you all said in the past half hour.
Well, Dave, do you guys see anything different up, than the Caloosahatchee, North Fort Myers area with regards to some of the fall transitions and the species and different types of patterns?
Well, it does based on the salinity level too. It's much or more than, I'll say, the temperatures. Right now, the Caloosahatchee in downtown Fort Myers is about as fresh as you can get.
About
2 weeks ago, looking at the outflow from the Franklin Lock system up there, you were 1.5 to 1.8 billion gallons a day coming down the river. And then about a week ago, I noticed we were about 3 billion gallons roughly. And then yesterday's paper, I didn't look at it today, then yesterday's paper, like 6.5 billion gallons. You know, a billion and a half, they're tolerable. The system can work. The tidal flow isn't interrupted as bad. But when you get 6 billion gallons rushing down the river, the salinity level drops like a rock.
Yep.
And in that, it's not that there aren't fish here. I mean, the river still holds snook and tarpon and redfish and jacks, but their feeding pattern will change, because what will happen is some of the freshwater species, and a lot of that are invasive species, cichlids and things like that, get into the food chain, and it'll hold those fish here. So they'll feed on the cichlids, the Oscars and the Mayan cichlids and the thing, little tilapia and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But as we get into the fall, then hopefully our rain pattern will slow down dramatically. And when that happens, the salinity level will start to increase. And when it does that, then the bait system starts to take over. The bait will move up the river a little bit, and by that, you know, what's going to be in the river bait wise in the winter months aren't going to be big hordes of shiners or sardines or anything like that. It's going to be shrimp and things like that will move up into the estuary system, and of course during that pelagic movement, when our water temperature starts to change because of the cool fronts coming down, there'll be a movement, and there'll be bait in and around the mouth of the river, so to speak, and then the cooler it gets, the further south they'll go. There's not a big finfish population up here in the river. It takes grasses and things like that and higher salinity levels to bring them up. You don't really find them much up here in downtown Fort Myers. You will maybe as far up as some of the areas associated with Cape Coral, you'll find pinfish and things in that. But in general, then as that salinity level increases, there'll be trout will move up into the river. Extreme situations with mild weather and pretty good high salinity, we'll even get mackerel will come as far up as downtown Fort Myers. But that's kind of an extreme situation there.
Yeah.
Now earlier, I think when y'all were talking and talking about the movement south this time of the year, they've had one kind of minor cool front push down. If we get another one that's a little bit stronger, that'll really push the fish down. And something that may have started them early were the storms. Those storms that went up in the central part of the Gulf may have moved some fish more towards the Florida Peninsula just a little bit. And so when those fronts come through, the movement south may be quicker. There is a second tarpon season, and it's in the fall of the year when those fronts start coming through. And so the people that are interested in tarpon, you just need to keep your eyes and ears open and pay attention to what you're hearing about that type of a fish.
Oh, yeah.
I think Greg early on mentioned the king mackerel coming close to shore. Some friends of mine, what they do, they fish for kings quite a bit, more than you would think that a lot of folks do close to shore. Almost year-round. A lot of it depends on how cool it gets. But they fish for them with shiners in association with passes on outgoing tides. And they'll drift out from, say, Captiva Pass just to pick a pass. They'll drift out and have a rod or two out in back of the boat with live shiners on there, and they'll have shiners in the live well. And those fish tend to sit off where that current flow is going to bring them food. And as soon as they get a strike, then they'll start chumming heavily. And you'd be amazed at how close to shore some of the king mackerel are and how big they really are.
You're absolutely right. Dave, I can tell you a story that one of the first king mackerel I caught when I was first starting to fish here 20 years ago, I was soaking a cut piece of ladyfish off the lighthouse, and I caught a kingfish.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What size was it?
Oh, it was huge. It
really?
Was 30 pounds. 40. It was big.
Wow.
I didn't even want to keep it or nothing. I mean, it was so big, I'm like, what am I going to do with this thing?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe I got it in. You know, I was 50-pound fluorocarbon on a 5-aught circle hook.
And what time of year was it? What month? Do you remember?
About this time of year, because we were fishing the we wait, all those tarpon were just pushing south. And when they come down, and Dave, you can speak to this, it's pretty crazy because all they're doing is eating.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. They eat and run. But, you know, one of the really, really strange stories about king mackerel, and this goes back longer than 50 years ago, maybe 60. There was a time when those fish were on the move, and I don't know, the story that was told to me, I don't know whether it was in the springtime of the year on their northern migration or whether it was in the southerly migration, but the bait at that particular time was crazy. There was so much of it, and it moved way inshore. I mean, the big schools of sardines moved in close inshore, and there were king mackerel caught in St. James Creek.
What?
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
They just followed the food source, and then they moved in, they moved out. It's not like they stayed there for a week, but there was some, the story that was told to me is that there were king mackerel that were caught in St. James Creek. And that's a, that's a once in a lifetime incident. If it's once in a lifetime, it's probably once every 100 years or something like that could have happened. And then I think early on you were talking a bit about flounder, and there are a couple of areas around that seem to hold flounder because the bottom's just right for them. But if you think back when we had the freeze, which was what 18 years ago, whatever it was, and we had a big snook kill and a lot of jacks got killed, that took a lot of predators out of the system.
Yep.
And coincidentally, at about the same time, our shrimping fleet decreased in and around the Lee County area fairly dramatically. There were not a lot of offshore shrimping going on, so the bycatch kill was minimal at the time. And it just in coincidence, when you take big predators out like snook and jacks, all of a sudden there was an increase in the number of flounder reports that we got, and some of the reports that we got were as far up as the I-75 and the railroad trestle of folks that were this came from commercial crabbers of the numbers of flounder that they were finding in their crab traps, and they still do to an extent. But there was a big influx of flounder in our fishery here for about a 3-year or 4-year period after the freeze, and then as the snook rebounded and the jacks
disappeared,
the predator fish rebounded, then all of a sudden the numbers of flounder that you heard caught really dropped off. Mike Smith caught a huge one in Estero Bay. How big was that flounder that you caught in it? How many? Yeah, it was like 32 inches.
Whoa. Wow. That's
huge.
Big for this area.
Yeah, I've never seen one that big.
That's a Jacksonville fish. You know?
Yes, yes. Wow. Well, it's interesting, Dave, that you talk about the freeze and what that did. The red tide, I think, also had a huge effect on our flounder population, because even now when I crab, at night or in the day, typically you'll see those little tiny baby flounders here and there. I don't see very, very many of those anymore.
Well, I feel sure that a couple of 3 years ago when we had that huge algal bloom in the river and the some of the reef system, near shore reef systems just went downhill like a rock.
Yeah.
The effect on the juvenile fishery like that is dramatic. The other thing that it has an effect on is with our pompano fishing. You can do pretty good right after you have one of those red tide outbreaks, because what you get is the little, what the hell are those little
sand fleas?
Crabs that are, sand fleas, yeah. Mm-hmm. Kills off the sand flea population. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, the flounder fishery, those fish are marauding around. They're looking for food. So beach fishing like that can actually be pretty good after the red tide is gone, because they're scrounging around looking for food. So fishing on the bottom like that actually can be really, really pretty good.
God forbid I ever catch a 32-inch flounder. He's never going back in the water.
I don't know that I know, right?
If my clients catch a 32-inch flounder, I'm going to be like, that's poisonous, but I'll take it home and feed it to my roses.
That's right.
Yeah, you really don't want to eat that. It's no good. Once they get to that size, they're no good.
Yeah,
trust us.
Very wormy. Yeah, you don't want that.
Well, one of the – there are two areas up in the northern part of the county that I at times haven't recently, because I haven't been up there doing it, is there's an area on the on the backside of Cay Acosta at the north end called Quarantine Rocks. Mm-hmm. Quarantine Rocks for me, we caught some really nice flounder off that, almost always keeper sizes. Mm-hmm. Another place that folks can go is on the east side outlet of Jug Creek. A lot of folks call it Shell Cut. Mm-hmm. There's this big sandy depression right after you get out of the mouth of that creek, and that's always been a pretty good flounder spot for us. And then another place that was in the Gulf, and it used to be called, I guess it still is called Charlie's Pass, although it isn't a pass anymore. It's mm-hmm. it's silted in out in front of that. The last time that my oldest son and Mike and grandkids were out, we were fishing off of there, and we probably caught a dozen flounder and associated to where Charlie's Pass was, even after it closed up. It's a big sandy bottom out there, and excuse me, and they like that kind of thing. But there are some areas around, if you scout them out a little bit, you can find flounder fairly frequently.
Yeah, most of the ones that we catch they're tiny. They're 12, 13 inches.
Yeah, well, we actually caught one. Greg and I were fishing a tournament, and I'm going to say it was, 8 years ago now?
At least. Oh, my goodness. Yours was big. That was
That
was a 23, 24
it was,
inch fish.
Yeah,
that
was it was about fish. 22 to 23 inches maybe. But, we were fishing a tournament looking for snook, redfish, and trout. And we ended up getting a flounder.
Like, that goes in the cooler.
Yeah.
darn flounder.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, geez,
we're like,
darn.
Oh, the stupid bycatch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think... Grab me
every once
crab
in a while, we like
flounder.
Stupid bycatches.
Yes,
right,
exactly. Last week we were trying to catch a few ladyfish for cut bait, and they kept catching pompano. I'm like, just keep going. This is good.
Yeah. You know, that's really something that you can go out, and when you're trying for a specific species, you're always catching ladyfish.
Right.
You know, yeah. And because you're hunting really in earnest, you're looking for the trout or you're looking for whatever it is. Yeah. But I can remember a while back, the CCA puts on a fishing tournament for kids that they call a fundament. And one of the things is it's like, it's not a mystery fish, but the kids can catch three of any species. And it ends up going into their total. And one of the really hardest fish to catch during that was ladyfish. Because people generally don't go out looking to catch ladyfish. I mean, you'll go out on your charter, do you, and say,
we're going to go fish
for ladyfish today. Well, that puts the curse on you right there because you're not going to.
Yeah, unless you're going out to get them for cut bait.
Oh, I just be like, hey, I need you guys to cast here three or four times. Catch us three of these. We're gonna go cut them up and catch some big old reds. And all of a sudden, it's like pompano, pompano, pompano. I'm like, well, this isn't a bad thing.
No.
Well, that was really interesting, Dave. Thanks for the insight. It's. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear about some of those fish, like those kingfish that come in that shallow, given the conditions and the bait situation. So thanks
there'll
for sharing time, that.
There'll be a time pretty soon when it starts to cool off. If you look around within sight of land, generally in that 35 to 45 foot of water, there'll be blackfin tuna there too,
which is really
amazing.
Yep.
To have them come in that close. But they follow the food source, so that's the deal there.
Yeah, dang, we absolutely. Caught another blackfin. Jeez.
Yeah, another one. Throw another one.
There we go. All right, Dave. Well, they are playing our tune, but thanks so much for your time this morning, and you have a great rest of the weekend. We'll catch up with you next Saturday, for
okay,
sure.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Go Big Red.
Bye. Yes,
bye.
Yes.
Take care, Dave.
Oh, that's great, Debbie.
Bye. Have a great weekend, Dave. All right, that is Dave Wester with Lear's Economy Tackle. If they don't have it, you don't need it. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back after these messages.
And all around me, a voice was sounding. This land was made for you and me.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. That's a good jam right there, Rick. Greg's chair dancing even. He's bebopping over there. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with Captain Greg Stamper of Chinook Stamp Charters.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good to be here.
Good info this morning. I mean, really interesting conversation with Dave. Really enjoyed that.
You had a texter talking about the kingfish off the sand.
Yes, actually, we did get a text. Mm-hmm. So they didn't put their name in the text message.
It's okay.
But yeah, guys, feel free to send us text messages. Text lines are open, 239-337-ESPN. That's 239-337-3776. And texter said, yes, Sanibel Pier does produce kings this time of year, mm-hmm. and I saw a school of at least 50 Spanish Macs in the river a little before the Miserable Mile just a few weeks ago. Yep.
You wouldn't believe some of the fish that I've seen caught off that pier.
Yeah,
I've seen redfish that were 40 pounds. I mean, huge bull reds, giant snooks, goliaths, tarpon, kings, obviously, that's there, Spanish. Pomponos, that's just, you got to look at where it's situated. It's just...
Yeah, it's a point.
And it rips.
It rips. Yeah. There's tons of current right there. Yeah, absolutely. All right, we got future Captain Finch standing by on line one. And I think he's got a freshwater report for us this week. I believe he mentioned last week he was getting out. So let's hear from future Captain Bradley. Hey, Bradley.
Good morning, Captain Debbie. How are you?
Doing good. So what has been going on with you? I know you had some plans, if I remember correctly, to get out and do some bass fishing this past week, right?
Yes, I did. I caught 11 bass.
Nice. Nice work. So so fill us in and tell us what you were using and the types of areas that you were fishing. Give us the scoop.
So it was like ponds. I was fishing some ponds.
Yep.
And I was using a black and blue bandito bug from Guggen Baits.
A Guggen Baits. All right, the bandito bug. Sticking with those dark colors.
Yep, and a topwater spook, the black and silver topwater spook.
Nice. Okay, so you were doing a little bit of the walk in the dog type thing and probably doing that, in the evening, like right around dinner time?
Yes, yes.
Very, very cool. So any size to the bass? What size range do you know? Do you have any idea?
The biggest is probably like 2.5.
All right, so fun. That's fun.
Yeah, it was still fun to catch them.
Are the frogs, were there a lot of frogs chirping?
Wait, the biggest was 2.5, meaning... He got 11 bass.
Yeah, up to
so
two
I was
and
asking,
half pounds.
Oh, 2.5 pounds. I gotcha. All right. Gotcha.
Do I have to turn this TV off?
The biggest bass was 2.5 pounds, and I caught 11 bass.
I gotcha. Okay. He said 2.5, and I just wanted to clarify pounds. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And then, so what about on the saltwater side?
I haven't really.
No saltwater fishing this week?
You've just usually going to the beach.
Okay.
And seeing friends.
Okay.
Well, that's important, too.
Yeah.
Very cool. Good.
But at the beach, there are some snook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've been seeing them?
Yeah, yep.
Very, very cool stuff. Yep. And how does the water look when you've been at the beach? Is it a little bit more churned up lately? A little bit murkier?
Pretty clear.
Yeah.
Pretty clear. And then on the bass, I just wanted to say for something, as soon as I cast in the bait, they like hit it on top of the water.
So they were fired up when you were out there.
Yeah.
And you said you were fishing later in the afternoon, early evening.
Yep.
It's got to be because of all the rain. Those frogs, I know, are going crazy.
Yeah. And Bradley, you fishing probably right along some of the vegetation lines that are along the shoreline, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Very, very cool stuff. Yeah, and I know a lot of times it seems like if we get those afternoon rains and you go out right after the rain, they are just super fired up. So,
yep, and then I was thinking
awesome.
Of heading out today, too.
Cool.
Yeah, get out there. Well, great. Thank you so much for your report. It is always good to hear from you. I'm glad you got out there to chase a few of those green fish this week.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's going to get even better over the next couple of months. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure you are too. Catch some of those big, chunky green fish.
Yep.
So, well, awesome. You take care. You have a great rest of the weekend. Hopefully
you'll
get out there with the family, and we'll catch up with you again next Saturday, Bradley.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Have a great weekend. Take care.
You too. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. That is future Captain Finch calling in.
On the bass.
So, Greg, we were talking about we started to talk about the negative tides that we see in the winter, and then we were starting to get into, you know, the shifting winds. Mm-hmm. And also, I wanted to touch on basically how you can start to use wind to your advantage with some of those tides. So depending on the direction of the wind, paying attention to that and using it to your advantage when it comes to the different tide phases.
Okay. So going back, earlier we were talking about just paying attention to when it's super low to where there is water so that you know that you could go in there, for example, when it's at a negative or a normal low.
And just paying attention to the structure.
And the structure. But you also need to pay a lot of attention to the actual current of the water. Okay, so, you know, it doesn't just come in and go out. There's water moving in every direction in certain parts of the bay. Mm-hmm. There's water that on the incoming tide goes north. There's water on the incoming tide that goes south. There's water that goes east. There's water that goes west and everything in between. Mm-hmm. So if you can pay attention to where these currents are and what the tide does on either an outgoing or an incoming tide, and then you're fortunate enough to somewhat line up the wind on some of these points where you already know the current's hitting, you're going to have ambush points where bait is going to be pushed to it. There's structure, obviously, if it's on a shoreline or an oyster bar where the fish are going to be comfortable hanging around it. And you can give yourself a lot better opportunity at not only casting further, but not being so close to these areas where these fish are going to be ambushing bait fish. Obviously, you know, if you pay attention and you understand the currents where you are fishing. Now, obviously, if you were in a river, it's easy to figure out the current for the most part. Okay. It's basically coming in the river or going out, you know, but when you're in a bay, whether it's Pine Island, Matt Lachey, Estero Bay, wherever you're fishing, whatever bay system you're fishing, you need to understand the currents so that you can help yourself layer down the line with the direction of the wind and what your currents are doing currently during the time you're fishing. What your currents are doing currently, which is the proper way of saying that.
And that wind is going to give you even more current if you figure out how to line it up.
Now, the other part of that is understanding, especially when we get winds, just say anything above 10 miles an hour, that can start to help or hurt a tide.
Yes.
So in other words, let's just make it easy on everybody and pretend that the wind is coming hard from the east and the tide is coming straight from the west. Okay, that's not reality, but just pretend that. At some point, the wind can be strong enough to slow the tide down.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
So when you start to understand that, you're going to have lower than normal lows or not as low as the low should be because the wind is helping to push water in or hold water out. That's important to understand.
Yeah, very much so. We actually have Dave calling in from Punta Gorda. He's got a question for you, Captain Greg. So we're going to head over to line one. Hey, Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Captain.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for calling in. You got a question for Greg?
Great show, and Dave's awesome.
Yeah.
So anyways, Greg, you said whether you're crabbing during the night or the day, as far as crabbing, all I knew was that you know, put bait in the crab trap, threw it out, and came back the next day or two.
Okay,
so what do you mean?
So let me explain what I'm talking about there. So what you're thinking of with the crab traps, okay, you can put bait in a crab trap. People use pig's feet, old fish, mullet, whatever. They stuck them in their crab traps. They're basically trying to eat crabs. They're trying to get something for dinner. So those are your crabs that could be upwards, let's just say point to point, a full-grown blue crab is primarily what they're catching, is about 9 inches. That's a big blue crab for our neck of the woods. What we're looking for are bait size crabs. So when we're fishing, for example, tarpon, a 2.5 to 3 inch crab is a perfect size crab. If I want permit, a 1.5 inch, a 2.5 inch, give or take, perfect size crab. If I want to catch sheep's head or even pompano, things like that, small ones that are like an inch in diameter. And we have a lot of different types of crabs besides blue crabs here, and they flow on our tides. In other words, they use the tides like a bus system. They can ship them out. They can eat, follow that current all the way out. And when the current starts coming back in, it brings them back into their home. They can get back in the grass and chill out until they like that next tide. So we're out there dipping crabs both in the daytime and at nighttime, but it's always on those really hard outgoing tides. Mm-hmm. And depending on what we are going to fish for is going to depend on what size crab we're really trying to catch. But we'll take any crab that's 2.5 to 3 inches max, all the way down to about 1 inch. And we'll catch as many as we can on the days when those things are flowing, because you can keep them alive. We use at our marinas, the guys who have docks of their own, we have bait pens that we build that we can put these crabs in. So, you know, if we're going to go buy those same crabs to go catch tarpon or permit, they could be $4 or $5 a piece at certain times of the year. And I can go out and catch 100, 150 crabs on my own dime, just my gas and my hard work to catch them, and not spend $400, $500 if I wanted 100 of them. You get me there?
So you're using a net.
I'm using a small dip net. So, like, imagine your dip net for your bait on your boat, but now make it the size of like something you're cleaning a pool with.
Like a pool skimmer.
Okay. Yeah, sort of. But anyhow, and we're just sitting there on our trolling motor or on anchor, and we're just dip netting these live crabs. And everything eats crabs. I mean, it's just like you wouldn't want to be a shrimp in your life. You don't want to be a crab either. Everything eats them.
Now, are you if you're doing it at night, are you just putting your net in, or you got it lit up?
No, I'll just take you can do it a lot of different ways. Some guys will actually apply small lights on the fronts of their boats so it's shining on the water, and they'll just be barely holding on their trolling motor. Today's technology, you have these spot locks and stuff where your boat can basically stay in one spot. And when they start flowing out, they start flowing. I mean, you could dip a couple hundred on a good night, on a bad night, 30, 40, 50. But crabs they're like, you could play poker with crabs. If it was five guides sitting around a table and all we had were buckets of crabs, it would be a pretty good poker match.
Okay. So you basically, you know, you're lighting up your boat kind of like if you were a boogie netting.
Yeah. And you're just dipping. You know, there's one there, grab them. There's one there, grab them. There's one there, grab them. And a lot of us will have more than one, like two of us on the boat or three of us on the boat. Two of us are catching them, throwing them in the boat. One guy's on the deck just pulling their claws off and throwing them in the live well.
Which every once in a while you can do too, like with the blue crabs when we want to eat them.
You do get big blue crabs that will come by that you could net. It's a lot easier just to throw some traps out there or just, you know, pay your local crabber $60 to get, you know, two dozen off of them.
Yep, true.
Yeah, I had a crab trap off my dock, and one time I pulled it out, and I had a 16-inch black grouper in it.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, I mean, he smelt what was in there, and he was like, and it's also structure. He was probably pretty comfortable in there.
That's funny.
Cool. That was hell getting him out, but.
But that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about when we talk about catching crabs. Yeah. It's not to eat. It's to use for our clients or for us to go fishing.
Yeah. Well, Dave, thanks for listening and thanks for calling in. We appreciate it.
Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Yeah, you bet. Have a great rest of the weekend, Dave. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Bye. All right, we actually get to head off to another break. Man, where does time go? You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida on the ESPN
USA,
Southwest Florida
USA,
app. We'll be back USA. After these messages.
My baby's been wishing that I take her fishing. So we waited on the perfect day. Hitched up my old John boat. See if it would still float. Should have seen the smile on her face.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen, and I am in the studio this morning with my guest co-host and better half, Captain Greg Stamper of Snook Stamp Charters.
What's going on, Debbie Hansen?
And we are talking about the fall transition, what we're going to start to see with regards to shifting patterns in our different fish species, where they're going to be. Hopefully, depending on the changes in the weather and the changes in the tides and basically what we should be looking for when we're out there. And I know we've talked a little bit already about the negative low tides that we start to see in the winter. Mm-hmm. You've covered a little bit about the wind. Mm-hmm. And we actually just got a text from our good friend Bob Brooks, and he was interested in how and where you try to fish those super slow, long, changing tide days. So strategies for fishing those really long, slow tides.
Okay, so here's what I suggest for those long, slow tides. Don't go fishing. No, I'm just kidding. You still got to go. But you need to figure out where in your area has the tightest squeezes, okay? So let's just take any given pass, okay? Because this is a good example of when I start at a slacking or low tide, I may start somewhere where I know the water is going to come in first into my area that kind of squeezes down, okay? So it's a little tighter. Any place where there's a tighter squeeze is going to, a little current is going to be a lot better than what the current would be in a wide area, right? So any place that has a smaller or a tighter section where the water is moving in will tend to have a little more current. And typically, if you start to realize these areas, they're a little deeper as well because the current, when it gets going, rips through those areas, right? Like there's some places where at a really hard dumping tide, the current could be moving at 5-6 knots. Well,
right.
That's tough to fish unless you got a lot of weight, right? But on a tide where you're suffering, it's slacking, it's barely moving, that's just perfect for you to get down there deep. And those fish are going to be in those deep holes, especially during the winter months. Anytime you can fish a dock that's near a pass, that's a good target. During those slow crawling tides, fishing the pass, you may fish in your pass, like Carlos Pass is a great example for us because it's near us. I might go out there real quick. Let's see what's going on. We'll tip some jigs with shrimp, or we might use a popping cork with a long leash or whatever and see what happens. Does the boat even move? Is it completely slack? Is the tide going to be helped by the wind or hurt by the wind that day? You probably already know because you know the currents and the wind setup.
Well, those long, slow tides are a prime opportunity for you to consider wind as well, I would imagine. Because even if the tide is slower, but you've got some wind.
The pinches, though, the pinches, anywhere where you may have anything that's tighter, that's going to have whatever current is there is going to be at least stronger than if it was just a big wide area. That water is going to have to pinch into a spot. Those are great spots to fish, or that's deeper. Those docks are good spots to fish. Typically, Bob, when I'm fishing in the winter and it's cold and I don't have a good tide, that's full out sheep's head time. Like hitting those docks, using small pieces of shrimp on small hooks, light leader, because they're really not going to break your line. You just got to get that hook in that hard mouth and target those fish that you know are going to be targetable during that time. Whether I'm using crabs, shrimp, some people use tube worms, sand fleas, all those things work well. And then as I start to get a little bit more current, then I'll start to, then you kind of like, in my mind, I'm upgrading, right? All right, let's go catch some, let's go see what happens with the trout. Okay, the trout are eating. Great. Let's go see what's going on with the redfish. Hey, the redfish are eating. Great. Well, what the hell? Let's go see if the snook are going to eat today. You know, you keep upgrading from there. Or you go with what Mother Nature will give you. If Mother Nature is only going to give you sheep's head and snappers for an hour, well, at least you're catching fish and the people are having fun. You're having fun. If there's nothing going on, well, it is just like that, right?
Well, and I know for you guys that do, you know, the inshore saltwater trips, it's a lot of times it's the mangrove snapper and the sea trout during the winter months.
And sheep's
head. And the sheep's head that are, you know, that are saving the day and providing your clients with a lot of really good action.
You start with the fun stuff, and then after an hour of catching 30 or 40 or whatever of those things, you go, okay, let's go after snook. Let's go after reds.
Yeah.
Or whatever you're trying to accomplish, you know, let's go out. It's flat calm. Let's go see if we can get on a line of traps and hit some triple tail. Or if I get out there and I see there's a million people doing it, I don't even bother.
Yep. Well, and now is a good time just to remind everybody, because I know we've got a lot more people that are going to start coming down for season this time of year. Make sure you check your regulations, or make sure you're using that Fish Rules app that's going to give you the regulations that apply to the area you're fishing based on your geolocation. Because remember, guys, from Sarasota Bay down through Gordon Pass, snook and redfish remain catch and release only. That's through May 2022. Sea trout, it's a 6-fish limit, and you are allowed 1 fish
for
over 19.
6 for the boat if there's 2 people.
6 for the boat, yep. And those fish have to be between 15 and 19.
Correct.
1 over 19 is allowed.
Included in that 6. You can't have 7.
Correct. And as far as offshore goes, too, red grouper, gray trigger fish are closed. So if you're going offshore right now, it's primarily been about snapper. I know, Greg, you've heard some good reports of the lane, mangrove, and yellowtails.
Well, that's
out there.
That's what so they have to. They have to do that. That's what they're. You know, you've got a lot of closed items, so they're going to be snapper fishing primarily. They'll probably turn that into other things, you know, over the next month. You know, whether it's kingfish if they start getting thicker or whatever they're going to go after. But that's kind of what they're stuck doing. Another thing I'll say before we go into a break, because I know you got run out of time here.
Yeah, we got another minute.
Is, you know, we're talking about these different species and what's coming and kind of what you expect. I will highly recommend before all the snowbirds get here that you go to like Lear's or your favorite tackle shop and you pick up the right size hooks, the right size leaders, the right size corks while they have them, because what happens, and it happens every year, like tarpon season is a great example of this. Like I'll buy my stuff for the year. And when there's no tarpon here, I'll be shopping for my tarpon stuff in January and February, right? So I have all my hooks, leaders, everything I want. Well, if you wait until these fish show up and you're going to go into Dave's place and you're going to be looking for specific things, guess what? Everybody else knows they just showed up and they're out there trying to stock
their
box.
Well, and it's not just that. Right now we're dealing with supply chain issues. So you really need to make sure you're on top of keeping your tackle stocked for sure. When you see it, get it. Don't wait because it may not be available other than that. So, all right, we need to head off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back after these messages.
Good morning, love. How was your sleep? I missed you even more.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.